We're here today with our good friend of the show, Casey Conway. Casey just finished speaking at the annual Miami CCIM event where we go over the entire marketplace. Casey brought the house down as usual. Casey, I saw you at NAI just a couple of months ago, and you did what most people can't do. You made it all fresh. It was great. It was fun.
I appreciate it.
Now, tell everybody your background and why you're such a knowledgeable dude.
I guess I'm one part crazy, right?
You're totally crazy, is what that is.
Yeah, I keep hoping I'll get a late night economics comedy show. That's what I'm really trying to audition for.
Four or five people will watch.
Four or five will watch.
It's great.
Can I count on you for one of them?
Oh, I would definitely watch.
So, I grew up in Colorado, ended up in the South, going to Emory University, 30 years in real estate finance, you know, banks and life companies. 3 years ago, said enough of that, joined the University of Alabama to try to assist them with their real estate center and bring in the commercial real estate dimension. And simultaneously with that, I joined CCIM as their chief economist. And so I make up the numbers. That's what I do.
That's really great. Now, you come up with all these different acronyms and all these different things that mean different indicators, but I really wanted to kind of go in a certain way. We always talk about the economy and what's going on today. I'd really like to kind of look out into the future. It's the beginning of a new decade. What are some of the things that you see that'll be important in the next 10 years that may or may not even be readily apparent to us today?
Yeah, so there are two in particular I talked about here. I kind of tried to introduce a little bit last year, a little bit there at NAI.
Gotta go slow. This stuff is mind-numbingly complex in some cases.
So the first one is my favorite acronym, OTIF. And it's basically an acronym that kind of sounds like what the F, so when I come home and the kids have messed up the house, what the OTIF is going on?
Oh my gosh.
So it's a metric that will permeate down into every industrial and retail property within 10 years. It stands for on time and in full. It was introduced by Walmart about 3 years ago to basically get its supply chain focused on. In order for Walmart to compete with Amazon and be successful with online grocery, they had to deliver on their promise to be on time with their e-commerce purchases and in full. So you don't just deliver half the bananas and the wrong melon, you get it all delivered. So they implemented it 3 years ago. It's implementing very well. Others are adopting it, and it will push down, that I think, down to warehouses. Warehouses and retail centers will have an OTIF score that will influence their cap rate, their vacancy rate. So really watch for the evolution of OTIF if you're in industrial and retail. And
so that basically talks about the physical efficiency and how the building can help me fulfill my needs?
So it's a combination. It's a confluence of a lot. So one is location. If you're in a very congested location and trucks can't get in and out on a timely basis, that's going to adversely affect your score. Mm-hmm. The other is the design of the building. So if you've got a very old building and you don't have cross docking or whatnot, that could influence your score. If you are, say, a design building, like what I'm going to look at tonight in New York by LaGuardia, old industrial, low clear ceiling height, terrible design, but it's near LaGuardia Airport, easy access into the New York boroughs, it gets a high OTIF score because who can get that close? So you may put up with design officials. So it's kind of the convergence of the features, physical and locational, that make your delivery on promises of on time and full more efficient. And the less efficient you are, the worse that score will be, the higher you'll be better.
Well, this is important to lenders and people that are buying. And then you mentioned another statistic that's really, to me, not a statistic, but it's more policy oriented. And it seems like it's more bureaucratic stuff we have to deal with. And there's Republicans in the White House. So how am I getting more bureaucratic hoo-ha with Republicans in charge?
Hey, you know, the world's crazy, right?
It is. It's upside down.
It is. So the other one is ESG, Environmental Social Governance. So it's kind of emanated from Europe. It also emanated out of kind of the Me Too movement, where the S and G were important: social diversity in your workforce, governance on your board of directors. But then they decided to tack on the E, environmental, saying, well, everything we do, while being diverse and having, you know, good governance, we want to make sure that we do well for the environment. So the E that's embedding down into real estate is companies and funds and even at the local zoning level are stating that if you're a developer, if you're a property, if you're a fund, and you don't have an ESG policy, and you're not doing things that are good for the environment with your property, You may be ineligible to be acquired or funded in a fund. You may be ineligible for a zoning rehabilitation on your building. All these rehabs will have to have an environmental component. So it's things like changing out your lighting, adding electric charging stations. So we're seeing the E part of ESG really reach down into the real estate side, and I think it's going to drive us all nuts.
Wow, that is kind of nutsy. Is this something I need to put on my LinkedIn page that I do social good and I do environmentally focused stuff? And
so one of my messages to the audience today was, no matter what it says, just title it ESG and say you have an ESG policy and write some, you know, verbiage and put it on your website, because believe it or not, for funds, for investors, even banks, they're starting as a first screening is to go to your website. And if you don't even have something about ESG or an ESG policy, you're automatically excluded. Same with deal packages. Packages that are coming in to big banks or institutional funds, they're looking to screen whether that company, whether that brokerage firm, whether they are ESG, they have an ESG policy, whether they're thinking about ESG in the real estate. And if you don't, those packages don't even get looked at.
Wow, so I could just say that I look towards having a good positive impact on the community with public policy. I look forward to continuing to work on energy efficiency. I ask everybody if they've considered using energy efficiency and PACE financing, and that's enough to kind of qualify me and at least get me through the door.
That's for this year. And then what's going to happen, we're seeing this in DC and New York already, they're starting to create measurements for this. So the way it starts is on a building, they'll do a baseline of what your energy consumption is, and they'll say every year you need to improve that 10 or 20 or 30%, or for every major rehab or tenant redo, you got to increase it 10 or 20%. And here's the complexity for that. In markets like DC and New York now, institutional money is trying to figure out, well, should I buy this building? Am I going to make a decent internal rate of return? Well, how do I know that if I don't know what the hurdle mark's going to be? Because today they may tell me I got to improve efficiency 10%. Well, a year from now or the next election, they may say, no, it's got to be 30%. So your cap spend could just be, might not be able to calculate it.
Now, we're here down on the peninsula in Florida, and you keep telling me logistics is important. How can logistics possibly be important if I'm standing down here in the far southwest corner of the United States, basically an agriculture and resort economy?
So it is. So, you know, one of the misnomers about Florida is, well, you don't have any ports that handle more than a million containers, you're a rounding error. If you take the ports of Jacksonville, Everglades, Miami, and Tampa, the amount of containers and logistics activity you do equates to more than a South Carolina, almost a twice the Port of Charleston, and almost equal to the Georgia ports, which is number two on the whole East Coast. You put all the Florida ports together, the 13 of them and what they handle, and it's the biggest port in the East Coast. So the problem with Florida is you had so many great places to develop ports that had different objectives. Jacksonville was maybe Navy, you know, agricultural cruise ships, Tampa, you know, agriculture, some dealing with traffic coming from the Suez Canal in Europe and the other, the Panama Canal. So it got fractured. But you put it together, you know, you guys are a pretty big deal. And what's happening now is Florida's figured out how to efficiently get all this to one place. And they get it to a place called Lakeland, Florida, the Central Florida, and it has become the Inland Empire. So everything is coming in the ports, they're getting put on rail, and it's getting moved into Lakeland, Florida. People like Home Depot developing their big Florida e-commerce distribution in there, and all their stuff's coming in through Port Everglades. It's a big deal.
So it comes into Port Everglades, it goes over to Tampa?
It gets on Florida East Coast Rail, goes up, and it gets into Orlando, and it's shot across into Lakeland.
Wow.
And it's become the Inland Empire of Florida in terms of distribution.
Wow.
Toyota, Home Depot, Publix, you name the retail and product entity here in Florida, that's where they're at.
So then that's a place to go for jobs, too, then.
It is. It's becoming very important. Logistics, distribution, e-commerce, all that type stuff.
So I went to Frostproof 10 years ago. It was a one-horse town with a Dairy Queen. What's going on in Frostproof?
So everything that where they grew strawberries or did whatever, it's all gone. I mean, you just literally go take a trip out to L.A. Long Beach and look at the Inland Empire, come back to Lakeland. That's what Lakeland's going to look like in about 5 or 10 years.
Wow, wow, wow. That's absolutely amazing. Hey, listen, Casey, we've got to take a break. Can you stick with us and do another segment?
You bet.
Awesome. Okay, we're back with Casey Conway. Casey, thanks so much for joining us. It was great to hear your presentation at the CCIM event earlier this morning. By the way, is that available anywhere online?
Yeah, so if you go on to our website, or I'll just send it to you and you can post it on that.
All right, great. So we'll be able to post that up on the website. Okay, yep. That's great. So, you know, we've been talking a little bit about the economy and here in the state of Florida and in real estate. Let's go a little bit broader in general now. What do you see as some real changes that are going to come and impact our marketplace? For instance, it used to be 10 years ago I'd have to have my laptop. Now all I need is my cell phone. What can I expect to be some more innovations that we can look for?
Yeah, so, you know, now we talk about instead of, you know, e-commerce or the digital or a gig economy, it's now the augmented economy, everything's virtual reality. So retail's one example. So now if I want to go buy a couch, I can go online to that retailer and say Restoration Hardware. I can find the couch I want, I can change its color, I can put it in my room, I can take a picture of my room and place it in there, properly dimensioned, I can move the furniture around, and if it all looks good, fits and whatnot, I can just order it and it's all augmented. I don't have to go to a showroom, I don't have to touch it, I don't have to feel it, anything.
Wow, most people didn't even understand what augmented reality was. So now it seems to me like, well, tell me a little bit about what it is.
Yeah, so it's basically the virtual reality. Just, you know, think of a video game. It's basically bringing video game technology and simulation engineering that the NASA scientists taught us from the Space Coast. We're bringing all of that, instead of just doing games, now we're bringing it into real stuff like retail. We even do it with office space, meetings. You know, you can have an augmented, you know, conference and look, set up a room and you can place people at the top that are speaking, but really they're at their desk somewhere else.
Wow, that's wild.
Hotel, you can act like you're traveling someplace, have a conference, and, you know, augmented put the sunset in Miami Beach in the background, but you never went there.
Oh my gosh. So what does that mean for office space then? What's going to happen with office space?
So a couple things are happening, and you have a really unique situation happening. People are you know, I'd say small is the new big. Retail's getting smaller, office is getting smaller, getting more efficient. So you have something unique going on here, and that is with the Bright Line. So the demand for office space along the new Bright Line, you're seeing office buildings that last sold 5, 7, 10 years ago for 150, 200 bucks a square foot, now selling for 400 and 500 bucks a square foot, because people are realizing that really well done transit is creates real estate value, and it's where whatever is left over, where you do need office space, where it goes. So with Richard Branson having acquired Brightline and providing now the assured capital, it's going to connect to Orlando. It's absolutely phenomenal. So you're seeing some unique opportunities here, and the rest of the world doesn't know it, and the rest of the country doesn't realize what's going on, and we need a Brightline solution in Atlanta and New York and Denver. We need it everywhere, and here you guys have it going on. So
that's great. I mean, they got rid of the high-speed rail in California. That just doesn't seem to make sense.
Well, I explained the whole California situation. So we learned from the U-Haul report that the new U-Haul migration report, everybody's leaving California and everybody's coming to Florida. So Florida just bumped off Texas as the number one place that people are moving to. So the Texans aren't very happy about it. I explained the Texans explained it to me this way, that they think that bigger trucks are moving stuff into Texas, and it's a lot of small trucks, you know, moving from New York apartments into Miami condos. So they say it's smaller trucks and more volume of stuff's coming in. You know, Texas, everything's bigger. But what we're finding out is, you know what, with the bottom rankings, the two states that made bottom rankings for where people are moving, California number 49 and Illinois number 50. Broken fiscal policies, broken tax policies, broken anything to encourage business, anti-capitalism, you know, every crazy nut idea, every business entity or whatever is saying, I can't deal with this, I'm out of here.
Yeah, my college roommate just left Santa Monica and moved to Dallas.
Yeah.
Frisco. He took a job as a statewide medical sales rep, and his kids, they're just thrilled. They go hiking and biking, and they just love it, and it's a new lifestyle, and I guess that's what's going to start happening more and more across the country. Now, you don't even need to be present to be in business with somebody and on the team anymore. Individuals don't really need an office. What's going on with that? Individual entrepreneurs, with the aging of our society, how are the baby boomers impacting the rest of society, the Gen X, the Gen Z? What's going to happen with all that?
So baby boomers were learning a lot from the millennials. So one thing, you know, I've learned that I don't need an office. My office is typically a Delta Crown room at an airport. That's my co-working environment. They've taught us that we don't need to own stuff. We can Uber. We can Uber golf clubs. We don't need a second vacation home. We can, you know, Airbnb anywhere. So one of the things I think we're seeing in this modern economy is that the habits of the existing, you know, wealth generation, the baby boomers, were being taught by the millennials that we had it all wrong, that we can do more with owning less, and we don't even need a two-car garage full of jet skis and golf clubs that we don't use anymore. The second thing that's happening, the last decade, we talked a lot about these companies called unicorns. So these are these fast-growing tech companies out of California and the West Coast that reached $1 billion or $10 billion in capitalization, and we IPO'd them, and then they went nowhere, or they went into the stratosphere like an Amazon. So now, the new decade, it's not about unicorns. It's about zebras. So zebras, as the millennials become very entrepreneurial and Gen Z behind them, and they're more focused on, let's do good in the world. That's where all this ESG comes from. So don't worry about making a profit. Capitalism is secondary. It's about doing good in the world. And so have companies that fulfill promises of, you know, better healthcare or better environment or better housing. And so that's the new company that people are focused on, are called zebras. So if you want to know what's going to come in the next decade, I suggest we need to take more African safaris, because the different animal species, as we go from unicorns and see, Disney gave us probably the unicorn, Africa gave us the zebras, and I think, you know, who comes next, you know, an elephant or a giraffe or whatnot. But
oh, giraffe, it could see the future better.
Yeah, you stretch out. Yeah,
you
see
go.
It.
Here you go. You
head
can
in,
have that
head
one.
In the cloud. Head in the cloud.
You
clouds.
Can have that one. You can have that one.
That's a good one.
Now, I think that my firm is a zebra. We do social good. I ran for city commission. I help raise awareness about kidney transplants. We donate to the churches around town, clothing and food, and we provide leadership and mentorship. So I think that that makes us a zebra. I guess I got to change my whole website, don't I?
Well, and you need to change your suit. So the baby boomers, we used to wear very thin pinstripe suits, and now what we need to wear are zebra stripe suits, because everyone's different, like your fingerprint. So if you're a true zebra, you need a zebra stripe suit.
Well, almost. I changed my entire wardrobe. I never thought I'd do it. Now I'm wearing these stretch fabrics.
Yeah.
And now they have them in shirts. I'm not wearing one today, but I got one there. Everybody, I'm wearing my comfortable shoes. I got a whole wardrobe of the fancy shoes, but I wear the nice, comfortable shoes. I guess that what I really need to invest in is one of those online clothing stores that they have, where they do the vintage clothes. Everything I own, that's how you know you're old, when your whole wardrobe is vintage.
There you go.
Oh,
absolutely.
My gosh.
Well, there's a textile company. We're seeing textiles come back to the United States. You talk about trends. So there's one in North Carolina that is putting medically in treated hemp, like the Tommy Copper outfits, that's got cannabis oil into the garment, so we can release the
relaxing shirt,
your back and all that stuff. So you know, everybody's going to become, I think, more more calm and less, you know, shrill in all their communication, because we're all going to be wearing hemp-infused clothing. We're just going to say, dude.
Oh, yeah, well, I'll wear hemp-infused clothing, but it's going to make me have 60 more coffees per day.
Now, I'm waiting for Albert to give me the hemp-infused red shoes so that my feet feel well.
Oh, you're terrific. You're terrific. Now, how many places can you possibly get red shoes? And by the way, condolences on Alabama finishing below Florida in the final AP poll this year. I'm sure that they're ready to secede from the United States at this point.
It's a national year of mourning in Alabama right now. But, you know, sometimes they'll be back. Saban always finds a new game plan. But, hey, how about Florida? Look at that. Was it four? Never lost the Orange Bowl. And
very exciting. They had a great time there.
Very good.
Had a great time there. Saw a lot of friends there.
Our friend Todd Jones is very happy about Florida's performance this year.
Very happy. Todd Jones is a happy, happy man. He's a happy man. He deserves to be happy. His beautiful wife and daughter are great, too. So we're going to wrap up the segment. What's your forecast for 2020? What do you think we should look for? And in the 2020s, what is the one trend we got to focus on to be able to succeed?
So I think where we're headed going in the first half of the year, I'm going to segment the first half, second half.
Yeah.
So the uncertainty premium that I think we had in the market, holding deals back, deals were slow to close, they were being delayed at the end of the year. The uncertainty of impeachment, trade deal, tariffs, would USMCA get over the goal line? we got all those behind us, right? The House impeached Trump, sent it to the Senate now. We think they will today or tomorrow. We got through the Mueller report. We got USMCA, finally Congress on board. So all these uncertainties have been lifted, and the market is really poised to put capital to work, do transactions the first 6 months of the year. I tell everybody, just get her done. Do Nike. It's the Nike six-month period. I worry about the second half of the year because as we get into August and September, we get into the political conventions, we get into the national elections, I think the uncertainty premium returns. And here's my prediction. If we see a turnover in Congress, both the Senate and the White House, or one of those, we're going to have our own form of Brexit in the United States. And I've got a term for it. It's called Flexit. Mm-hmm. And so it's where Florida and Texas just exit. You'll vacuum to everything in terms of wealth and whatnot with U-Haul trucks out in the Northeast.
I'm ready.
And Florida and Texas say, we got it all. We'll see you later. You take your unfunded entitlements. You take your debt clock of $23 trillion, and we're out of here.
I'm ready. I mean, you know, the Northeast and the Midwest, have, you know, are products of different epochs. And it's time to refresh, and I'm hoping that they'll be able to replumb their markets the way Pittsburgh has.
Pittsburgh's a great phenomenal story. Yeah.
So, Casey, I want to thank you so much for being on the show, as always. Thank you so much for coming to Miami, as you always do. And if folks want to get your information, how do they do that?
So, if they just go to Acre, A-C-R-E, dot Culverhouse, C-U-L-V-E-R-H-O-U-S-E, not M-O-U-S-E, dot U-A dot E-D-U, or we'll just send you everything there. I'll let them know, you know, check our site out. I do a weekly Wednesday Insights called The Win. I have a lot of fun with it. I gave my Naughty and Nice Elf awards for the end of the year.
Ooh.
And so, you know, the Naughty were Congress, they were the Fed, they were Builder Elf that kept raising costs on everybody.
Ooh.
The Nice Elves were things like the job-making elves. They did
good. They did great.
And the optimism elves, small business and the consumer and the home builder, all optimism. That's what drives the economy. This is all about the optimism.
Look, I really think that we have too much pessimism. I think that, as you said, the conventions and everything are going to sell us pessimism. It's almost like you should start buying when they start doing that again. But I'm really optimistic about America. I'm optimistic about the future. I meet really wonderful people at these events, new people coming in all the time. You see, we're graduating new students, people that I work with at UF, the young people there are coming out. They're sharp. They're ready to go. It's really an exciting time. I think that we're at the beginning of the next technological revolution.
Just think where we were 13 years ago before smartphones. Now fast forward what that's done and all the changes in e-commerce and Amazon, and we went through unicorns to zebras and who knows what the next
giraffes.
Species, giraffes are next, you know. So we'll meet next year and we'll be talking about giraffes, and happy first Flexit Day.
Yeah, and it's going to be great. We're gonna have still positive energy because there is plans for no matter what way the economy goes, there's always a way to take advantage and make money. And Casey, you're always the one that's giving us the way. I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. Thank you so much to Casey Conway. We'll be back with more Freedom Business after this short break.